This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
LinkedIn is pretty great at a lot of things, like helping you tap into the latest trends and insights in your field. We cannot stop your coworker from tapping her pencil. LinkedIn can help you find new jobs that align with your career goals. We cannot help you find the source of that weird smell in the office fridge. Ew. And while we can't stop your coworkers from bringing their hobbies into the office, LinkedIn can help you bring your career to the next level. LinkedIn is the network that works for you.
Don't chew on that, Max.
Cooper loves that chew, too.
Oh, now he's into Cooper's food. Wow, he is loving it. What do you feed Cooper?
Blue Buffalo Life Protection Formula. He never leaves a crumb. I love it because it's made with high-quality protein, nutrient-rich fruits and veggies, and wholesome whole grains.
Looks like we're switching to Blue.
Blue Buffalo foods are made with the superior ingredients your dog needs to thrive. Can your dog food say that? Visit feedbluefood.com to learn more.
I have created
the most advanced AI soldier.
The wait is over. Tron Ares, now streaming on Disney Plus.
We are looking for something. Something you've discovered. And some of us will stop at nothing to get it.
Ready?
The countdown is complete.
There's no going back.
Our directive is clear.
Hang on!
Tron Ares, now streaming on Disney Plus. Rated PG-13.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. We got a conflict of weather reports here. I'm coming to you from the west coast of Florida, about 3.5 hours south of the Georgia line. And it is a balmy 68 degrees right now, climbing up to 70 today. Steve Fielder here with the Gone to the Dogs podcast, and I have my longtime friend, and we certainly don't talk enough. We were talking a few minutes ago. It's been about 4 months now since we last talked. The Redbone Man, Fred Moran. Are you still from Duquesne, Fred?
No, not Duquesne. Rushville now.
Rushville.
I moved from one county to another county probably 15 years ago. And when my wife passed away, I had a 4-bedroom house and 4-bath. That was too much for just 2 people, far as I was concerned. And then it got down to just me. And so I moved out to my kit place. I sold my house to a guy clear from Kentucky, and he wasn't a coon hunter, but we became friends. And I got him to deliver a couple dogs for me. He wouldn't take a dime for doing whether he's going one way or the other.
There's a lot of good people out there, Fred.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking to one of them right now. Hey, you tell me you're out there deer hunting today. When did gun season come in Pennsylvania?
Came in Saturday.
Last Saturday. Okay, right, the end of November. Well, Sunday was the last day of November, right. I believe, right? Yeah, right. I was just up that way, of course.
I bet I could guess where you were.
Yeah. Well, I actually went over to the Mercer County Club over there at Greenville.
Did you?
Yeah, they had that Chip Kozer with Elite Nutrition. He and Joy Dog Food. Well, he doesn't actually work for Joy now, but you knew his dad and you knew his granddad too, probably, Russ Kozer.
I used to sell Joy Dog Food for a while.
I got you.
And they give me a heck of a deal on not dog food, but they had some cages down there they got from the Army. It would hold a German Shepherd in there.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what they got them for or what purpose. And I remarked to him how nice they are. I said, them things will last forever. He says, you interested in any of them? I said, yeah. I bought 3 or 4 of them off them. And I think they only charged me $50 a piece. I bet the Army paid $500 a piece.
Oh, yeah, probably.
You had to see them to believe it. They were solid. An elephant couldn't bust them.
Well, you know, I would imagine, I'm just guessing, I have no way of knowing this, but they may have had kennels there where dogs were testing food on them or something.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
I never did ask them why when they had them and what they were doing with them. But naturally, when I looked at them, they were completely empty. I just wanted the cage. I didn't care whether something was in there or not.
And right.
I think I bought 4 for sure. I don't believe they had more than 4.
Was that back in your animal control days?
That was in the 60s, late 60s.
Yeah, I had a great time up at Randy Smith's. I was up there. I think we hunted 7 nights.
How many possums you treat?
We didn't treat a single possum. I can tell you that with my hand up. We did not treat a possum. Dogs looked really good. He's got some great dogs, Fred.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
He's king of the hill right now. He's won enough big hunts and so forth. He's been at it since a long time.
That's right. Well, this Elite Nutrition, Chip Kozer. Have you met the grandson, Chip, the younger one? He's not young.
I can't remember some of them guys.
Yeah.
There was a guy from, I think, Washington, PA, or close to Washington, PA, that I bought a lot of miscellaneous stuff off of him pertaining to dogs and that. And him and I can't think of his name. I coon-hunted him by accident. He told me where he lived. I said, I coon-hunt right over the hill from there. And I still continue to hunt down there. It ain't that far for me, and I go down there a good bit. There's more coon down there and better hunting than it is right around my area.
Well, Randy and I, on the last day that I was there, this trip, he picked me up at the airport in Pittsburgh and then dropped me back off.
Oh, you didn't drive up and bring a dog?
I didn't. No, I didn't. I just hunted walker dogs.
Okay.
But we had a great time. But on the last day, we went down to Waynesburg and went to Tom Strang's place. And visited.
How's he doing getting around?
He's getting around great. He's amazing. He really is. He and his wife, Agnes.
He's close to my age, maybe give or take a year or two, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, I don't know. Did you know Tom before he had his accident?
Before he had what now?
The accident that put him in the... Yeah. You knew him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
It couldn't have been long, though.
I
couldn't have been long. I knew his Uncle Andy. I know he mentioned his name somewhere along
yeah.
the way
mm-hmm.
because
yeah.
that's who he learned from.
I got and, you. Well, just and, a delightful guy. Really enjoyed the visit. We sat there at the table. His wife, Agnes, a very, very sweet
yeah.
lady. And, of course, she was over there busy doing something, trying to ignore all the coondog talk, I guess.
Naturally.
But, yeah. But Randy and I had just a great time. His boy, Randy's oldest son, Troy, was with us. And see, I met those guys all at the same time. I didn't know any of them. Except by name, you know, until 2016. And that's when I went out to Greencastle, and they had me out there judging the bench show for the World Hunt. And I met, that's the year Randy and Tom won with a Sioux female. And that's how I got to know those guys. And, boy, okay. I have really enjoyed their friendship, Fred. It's really been really been great. But anyway, I enjoyed going over to Greenville there. I haven't heard
that's
about
that. That's a decent club. That's
yeah.
a decent club.
Mm-hmm.
And probably right at the present time, one of the stronger ones up that way.
Yeah, seemingly they've got something going on about all the time anymore. But they had this, it was a 16-dog hunt, elimination hunt, a money hunt. And it was had $4,000 added purse. It was PKC rules, I believe.
Right, right.
And they had the Chip Kozler there had the do you know? Oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble here. I'll have to go back to that. You and me with these names today, huh? I think it goes with the age, but anyway, had steaks on the grill with baked potato salad, all the trimmings.
I can think of several guys that finish them up, but they wouldn't put them on the grill. They'd eat them all themselves.
I got that too. But we had a really good time over there.
I got a good friend. He lives 8 miles from me. I think he went up there. Scott Perkey. He's a farm boy. And I've known him since he was 14 years old. His dad, believe it or not, I find his dad for his dogs running loose one time. They're farmers, but
yeah.
you ain't gonna correct them. He never held it against me or anything, and they never change. Them dogs are still running loose somewhere.
I bet you.
but anyhow, he says, "Hey, Moran," he says, "why didn't you get my kid a coon dog?" That's all he talks about. I said, "You mean tell me nobody around here takes him hunting?" He said, "Nope." And I said, "Well, you got a guy right over the hill, got blue ticks, Herbie Almer when he was living. But he never went with Herbie for some reason or other. I don't know. I says, "I'll stop up someday. I'll call ahead of time and tell you when I'm coming. I'll take him hunting." He said, "Better yet, get him a dog." I had a 7-month-old female, and she was doing fair, but not what I thought she should be doing at 7 months old. I went up there it wasn't right away. A couple months later, I called him. I says, and talk to the kid, "You want to go coon hunting?" I might have talked to the old man. I don't remember. I told him, "I'll be up tonight. We'll go hunt." We went out hunting, and I told the kid before we started, "You see that female there?" I said, "You like it?" He said, "Yeah, yeah." And he was, like I say, about 14 at the time. And I said, "You can have it." And I said, "I didn't bring the papers with me, but I'll bring them up or drop them off there. The barnyards are always in there." And he said, "Okay." And anyhow, we went hunting that night. And this is the truth. I couldn't believe it. About the second chase we treed the first one. Second chase, the dog I just gave him split treed from my other dog. I was sick. I thought, I can't take it back off of a kid. So I let him keep.
Now,
keep
Fred,
the dog.
You know you're supposed to give a kid your best dog, you know.
I did that night. And, well, he later made the dog a Grand Night champion. He raised a lot of good pups out of it. We have one female, that female was, he bred it to my dog all the time. The last cross we made with it, he had the dog, maybe a good 8 years, and got smacked by a car one night. Boy. That was the end of it. But the last litter we raised was out of a male that I called, I won the state hunt with him about 10 years ago. He was a good dog.
Yeah.
There's a story to him, but I had a woman shoot him. I was out coon hunting. I'll finish Buck Perky for segment first, and then we'll go. Anyhow, the dog did good, and he made it a grand night, and we raised several litters of pups. And the last time, I was a male dog I had. I went down Butch Roeder. I'm sure you remember Butch.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Shirley were partners on darn near everything they had. Well, Kevin called me. He said, "Moran, I got a dog for you." I says, "How good is it?" He says, "You won't waste your time coming down." I says, "What do you want for it?" He says, $2,500. I says, "I'll be down this weekend." And when I got down there, they showed me that dog and another dog. He said, "We just got this dog this week." Told me where they got it, and it was a place I used to deer hunt in Kentucky, within 10 miles. But I says, "I know a couple coon hunters up that way, but I don't know the guy you told me who you got it from." We went coon hunting, and he wanted $1,000 for the one he just got. He said they only hunted it one night so far. I didn't see no difference between the $1,000 dog and the $2,500 except $1,500. So I bought the $1,000 dog, and he turned out pretty darn good for me. He was a little on the spooky side, and I hate that in a dog. And everybody does, I imagine. But
pretty much,
I had a black guy that used to hunt with me all the time. He lives in Wisconsin. I called him the Black Shadow. And
You spoke of him before. Yeah.
And anyhow, he went hunting with me the second night that I had the dog, or third night, something like that. And the dog, he seen that spookiness in him. "Uncle Freddy," that's what he called. He says, "I know you ain't going to keep that long." I says, "You watch. I'll get him out of that." I took him to schoolyards every day. We let the kids play with him. Got him over that shyness and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the better dogs I owned. And I had him maybe two years at least. And one night, me and Dutch Harvey was coon hunting. He's a good friend of mine, lives close by. And we lost a dog. And the tracker's telling us where it's at. We had permission on a property we started on and everything. And Dutch had a dog, but I think we had a chance to catch it. We caught it, and he was just looking for mine. So we went around the knob there, and we're getting a reading. We went down to the bottom of, you guys in Florida would call it a mountain, but it's just a big hill. And while we're down there, we're out in the truck seeing if we could hear them, because you can't trust them tracking devices all the time. And just then we heard two shots up on top of the hill where we more or less came from. I said, "Let's get up there." I says, "I don't like that." We jumped in the truck, drove around, and I passed it 100 times but never paid no attention. There's a driveway every bit of a quarter mile long, curved back to one house. So we pull up in the yard. It's 11 o'clock at night. Now, I don't want to knock on somebody's door and get shot myself or something. But I seen the woman in the kitchen with a house coat on, so I figured I ain't bothering her. She's still up and so forth. I knock on the door, and my tracker's going off pretty good then. And I said, "Hey, ma'am, you didn't see a coon dog up here, did you? It's like a red hound." She says, "No, I didn't see no dog up in the house, or didn't hear none." I said, "Well, there's two shots came from up here." And she says, "I didn't hear no shooting. I don't even own a gun." I said, "All right." I said, "I'm going to look." I didn't ask her. I told her I'm going to. I said, "I'm going to look around your yard and that, because my tracking device tells me the dog's close by." Well, I always hunt a dog. I learned a long time ago, it helps a lot with one of them lights on the collar.
Right.
I got off her porch and walked down the steps, and I only walked 20 yards, and I seen it blinking at the other, where the wood starts. I run over there, and the dog's stone dead there, laying in the grass.
Oh, man.
So I knew right then I'm going to have a problem. So I already got on the cell phone, called the state police, told them who they all know me. I said who I am, where I'm at, and come on out, send a car out here. I went back. I wasn't going to approach a woman again until the police got there, because I didn't want no problems.
Good idea. Good idea.
Her husband was home all the time, but he was up in the bed sleeping. He finally came out downstairs and that, and he was talking to me what went on. He was dumbfounded about it. He didn't know what transpired or anything else, but I explained to him. He was a real nice guy. And, well, she was too in a way, but she gives snippy answers. She says, "Oh, there was a dog here. He was after my rabbits in the pen."
I knew that was
a lie.
Yeah.
And but I wasn't going to argue with her. Anyhow, I said, "Ma'am, you don't realize what you did. This isn't a common dog or a street dog that you see every day. This dog's worth some money to me, and I've done a lot of winning with him in a dog contest." I wasn't going to explain what a coon hunt is and that. And I suggest you get an attorney, or your homeowner's policy will probably cover you, because you're going to be hearing from me and my attorney. And that's what I did. I took her to court. And most people have bad luck with this up here. I don't know. But I got the greatest lawyer in the world. He'll make Perry Mason look bad. And I met him on a case. He defended me on a dog case, a woman's dog. I don't even remember what I did that. Oh, I put it to sleep. And she sued me for the value of the dog. She lost, because we have a state law. You only have to keep him 48 hours, and then you can dispose of either
euthanize them, mm-hmm.
and take them to the Humane Society, but they're always filled up and got too many, and they only take a certain amount. But anyhow, she lost her case against me, and that's how I met my attorney. He never hunted before in his life. I took him to Wyoming. We've been everywhere together. He's a heck of a nice guy, and you can't beat him. And he'll make Perry Mason look bad, I'll tell you that. Not because he won that case. I've used him for various things, and we're good friends. And he never charged me a dime on any case. Everybody asked me, "And would you pay him?" I said, "I won't tell you. You won't believe it." At one time, I took a fancy gun in on a trade, a deer rifle with carved stock, And I thought, the way I beat a gun, I'll have it looking like garbage in no time. I give him that gun, didn't charge him a dime for it. He says, what's this for? I says, you always take one of my guns for deer hunt. Now you got your own. And, oh, he thought I was the greatest guy in the world. Well, if I counted up what I would have had to pay him and that I didn't pay, it'd be way more than that gun.
Sure.
But my lawyer... I says, we're going to sue for $25,000. I says, ain't that a little ridiculous? He says, nobody got that kind of settlement around here. He said, we're going to. The woman was dumb. She, I hate to say that, but she was. She lied. First, she admitted to having a gun. She said the dog went after her from a rabbit pen, chased her. That dog would never chase nobody, no how.
Hey,
and
I've been down this road
from it and had the gun over her shoulder and shot up in the air and killed the dog. Two shots up in the air. Now, everybody just looked at each other when she gave that testimony. And I had about five people that hunted with a dog. Patty Bizzard said, I judge it in shows and the night hunts and that. And she told him she was a judge for UKC and all that. That's went good with. I didn't have a judge like you'd think. One judge went before border arbitrators, three of them, but they were all retired judges. One was a beagle hunter.
And there you go.
My lawyer says, you're in good shape. You've got one hunter on the board there that he's going to go for the dog. I guarantee you that. And he was right. He helped a lot, that judge who was me. They offered me $12,000 off the bat. I said, no. Then he went into $15,000. I said, nope. And then they offered $18,000. Jim says, I should go ahead and take it, Jim. He says, hey, I'll get you your $25,000. I'll guarantee you she's a dummy. And Jim usually don't talk like that, but that, he did that day. I says, no, I have a saying, a little bit of something better than a whole lot of nothing. I says, them border arbitrators could change your mind maybe. You don't know how court works. I says, take the $18,000. I got the $18,000 out of it, and Jim didn't ask for a dime. I give him $2,000 of it, and so he had the first time he took money off me, and the only time. But I was well satisfied. I showed a copy of the settlement to Alan because there was a hunt that I went to, probably Automoke that I went to. Shortly after that settlement, and I showed him a copy of the paper. And to best of my knowledge, I know other guys that won similar situations, but they never got a settlement like I got. So,
that's good. Now, I saw there was a case out in Arkansas a few years ago. You know, I've been going, I didn't go this year, but I've been out there like 15 years
White
in a
River.
Row. White River, yeah. And there was a dog that got onto some private land, and the guy shot the dog. And actually, the dog was on the leash. The hunter had the dog on a leash. The
guy
shot it off anyway, which I thought was pretty bold. And I think, and that judgment was somewhere in over $100,000. But I don't know how much he made or whatever. But yeah, when I had that situation, and as you know, these we got to have landowners in order to be able to hunt unless we got public land. So I don't want to just completely insult all the landowners out there. But, you know, these people that do this kind of thing and then they start making up these stories, there must be a book somewhere that they get these things out of because they all tend to sound the same. You know, the dog was on my land. It tried to attack me. It was attacking my livestock. you know, and all. And I was running. And like you said, this one, in this case, she shot up in the air and the bullet came back down and killed the dog.
Oh, she picked the empty shell casings up in the yard before I got there.
Yeah.
And
told you she didn't have a gun.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And I looked all over that yard for them casings, and I figured she had a pick 'em.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's so typical. And fortunately, though, this thing of animal cruelty these days kind of plays into those cases. For the people that are listening out there, don't overlook that. When you get a dog shot by someone, don't overlook the idea that this is a companion dog. It means a lot to you and your family and all that, and it was cruel what they did to the dog. The dog
she had a lawyer that was he for homeowners policy protected her with a give her a lawyer.
Yeah.
Jim says he appeared against him before. He says he's pretty good. And I thought he did give good testimony and so forth, what he says. Mm-hmm. However, it didn't work out there. And like I say, it's one for the dog owners.
Well, every chance I get, I'd say this guy's name. Maybe somebody in his neighborhood's listening. A guy named Brad Roof, R-O-O-F. Shot and killed my dog. He was 18 months old, a plot hound. Shot and killed a dog that belonged to my friend Tony Ford, was just a young black and tan. I don't think quite a year old. And I went to court. And to emphasize what you said, you know, I got a $3,000 judgment is what I got. And Tony got $15,000 for his. But
did you sue for a certain amount, or did decide to give?
No, it was a bench trial. We went before a judge. The defendant had a woman lawyer. He brought a vet in there. He tried to say the dog was chasing his sheep, you know, and he had a rickety old. He had a rickety old sheep pen there with 9 ewes in it. And it's snow on the ground. He shot the dogs down in the woods. Well, actually, as he shot the black and tan, and at the shot, this young plot dog came to the shot, and he chased him. He testified that he chased him all around the yard, shooting him with a .22 rifle. I think it was like 9 times before he finally killed the dog, which that was hard to sit in a courtroom and take
and
listen to. But anyway, well, good for you. You got a good judgment for your dog, but that didn't replace the dog. That didn't replace the good times that you had with the dog, or would have with the dog.
I never sold a dog for $15,000. I sold one for $10,000, but lot of them for $5,000. But that would have been, I asked for what Jim told me, ask for more, see what they come up with. It worked out wonderful for me, but I like that dog. I don't fall in love with a dog, I had a couple good offers for nothing like that, no 15,000, but I like the dog. He threw out of one litter. I had a Pepsi female, the Perky had that I give him. She had one litter, 5 of the pups were Grand Night.
That's strong.
And
that's really
the other 3 were never hunted. There was 8, I believe, in the litter, and the other 3 were, they were coon hunted, but never in a night hunt.
Right. Now you were talking about Perky. Is that the complete story about Perky, or you said we were going to get back to him about something? Do you remember?
Well, we became friends, and a couple weeks ago, when the weather was a little better, I went up there 3 nights hunting with him. One night we seen 5 and treed 8. The leaves were still on then.
He's
a good boy. He'll do anything for you. He works for my kid now. My kid owns a block, builds foundations and stuff like that. And but he only works till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Then he goes home and helps the other guys and brothers. And
that's about my nap time every day.
Well, he milks 170 some cows.
Oh man, well he's tired. He needs a nap.
I would two things I would never want to do in my life: be with my kid as a ball player. The heck with the money. He makes good money, no question about that. But that's hard work.
And
another thing is be a farmer. Mm. You're married to that farm.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, listen, the guy over there that was doing a great job on those ribeyes over there at Greenville was John Owens. You know John?
No, I don't.
You don't know him? Okay, he's the vice president of the club over there. And
I've been there probably 5 or 6 times, but I don't know. I know some of the, most of the guys, I'd say.
Well, we won't go. Yeah, I don't want to go down the whole list, but do you know Keith Pierce, that's the president over there, plot guy?
He wasn't president when I was going up there. I'll put it that way. I don't know.
Had an unfortunate accident, fell out of a deer stand. I think the straps broke or whatever on his stand. And he was there at the event and all in a wheelchair. But he's coming along. They predicted he'll recover, but it's going to be slow, you know. But
there's a boy who used to belong to our coon club. He fell out of a tree. I don't know if he's shaking a coon out or what, but he's been in a wheelchair ever since. Now, he had a good walker dog, a good walker dog. In fact, I got a dog catcher one time. A farmer called me and says, "Hey, Moran, how about coming out here? There's a dog down the end of my field barking up a tree, and he's been there for 3 hours." I had a feeling whose dog it was before I even left. And I could have called one of the guys who worked for me, but I was the closest. I figured, I'll go get it. And so I went out there, and it was on the edge of the cornfield. And sure, the guy claimed he couldn't see the coon. That guy needs glasses. I saw the coon right away, but they ain't used to looking for it. And there was very few leaves on that tree. I just called the dog, and he'd come right to me. I forget the dog's name now because I'd hunted with him and against him and with him. And he came right over to me, and I went over to that guy's house and gave him his dog back. He explained to me how he got loose or something. He didn't lose him hunting, but he got loose or something. So he got his dog back. And the dog was one of the better walkers in our area, as far as I'm concerned. I can't think that dog's name now, but he was a nice dog.
Well, you know, that hunting around there, around Greenville and all, looked pretty good. That's
they got a lot of state game lands up there, too, which you're allowed to hunt on, you know. A lot of calves go to that state game land. I don't know why, maybe, but I'll bet if I hunted up there 5 times, I went there 3 times.
I got you. They take you to, well, most guys don't like to go to state ground, you know, when they draw out on the cast. They'd rather go to private ground, but I guess, you know, if it's good hunting, it's good hunting, you know.
Did you talk to Randy in last week or so?
Yeah, I hear some kind of communication for Randy about every day, maybe, or two.
Did you hear about the bear they killed up there below Greenville? 717 pounds.
Oh, you know what? I think I saw something on social media about that. Yeah, I saw that. I think I might have sent that to Randy, and he probably had seen it already. He's got bear right there on his place.
We had two in the garbage can where I live. About I live next to my kid, and he had two of them in his garbage can at night, 2 nights in a row.
Oh yeah,
his wife come out in the porch. And they just looked at her, and then they took off up the road back into the woods. I ain't seen them since, but I thought 2 more nights after that, my dog carried on like heck, and she don't bark. And I honestly felt the bear was going through the yard, and she could see him or smell him from her pen.
Well, you know, and you know this, but our listeners don't. Maybe they don't. Pennsylvania does not have a dog season.
Not for there.
But it used to be they only had like a 3-day season. Is that still the case?
No, no. It's longer than that. And then now they, I think the first week of bow season, they let you shoot a deer if you get, a guy lives 4 miles from my house. He killed one back at my kid's house, which is just 100 yards from my place. Hmm. He killed one with a bow and arrow there 3 years ago, a bear. He got it right in back of my shop. And, but we got a lot of bear. I trained in 1965. I trained 3 bear while coon hunting. Mm. And a mother and 2 cubs. The cubs were a big cub show at the time. Yeah. They were about close to 100 pounds. They were big. One came down before we got to the tree. We seen him in a cornfield while the dogs were running them. We're standing up on the road. Well, we didn't know what it was. We could see black. But I said, that's got to be a bear. Them dogs are on. Well, they treated back on the top of a mountain. And anyhow, the one young cub came down. Why, I don't know. And we had a squirrel dog. I let even a squirrel dog out with the coon dogs because it had probably tree one, I figure. It was a gritty thing. It was a good one. I had that dog a long time. I bought off of T.C. Jones. I killed, well, not me. Me and 2 other guys, we killed 57 squirrel with it in 4 days down Mississippi. I told T.C., I said, if you ever want to sell that dog, give me first shot. And about a year later, he called me. Freddie, you still want my dog? I says, unless you're ridiculous with the price. I says, I know your price has changed a lot. And he was a character.
Did you hear that story?
The only man I ever thought could teach me something about coon hunting.
Yeah, he had quite the reputation, for sure.
I liked him. He was a hard hunter. We used to go down, and he used to have that get-together. All his blue tick friends would come down there. But I was invited. Eddie Ross invited me down there. And I went down there and competed against all them blue tick. First night out there, now we're talking about 3 guys go this way, 3 guys go that way, and we're killing all the coon. We got 38 coon between our groups. I took my uncle down there one time. He was no hunter, but I talked him into going coon hunting. T.C. had every year rent a shack out in the woods and would all pitch in $5 or $10 and pay the rent for a week. And we had an old black guy, Arthur. He was the nicest guy you'd ever meet.
Hey, time out just a minute. I wonder when the black people talk about us, do they say, I knew this guy named Steve. He was a white guy. Do they? You think they do that? I don't know if they do or not. It seems like we always have to make that distinction, you know, and we don't do it out of any disrespect or anything, just to identify. But I just wonder if they, if people in the black community use that with us.
I'm getting to what might answer you.
Okay. All right. Proceed.
So he had old Arthur there. He was a cook. Well, first of all, a guy, he's deceased now. He went to school with me, Chucky Hagee, real nice guy. And he was a coon hunter. And I talked him into Red Dogs. Well, Chucky, we had a truck with a cap on. And we went all the way from Pennsylvania to Mississippi, and that was, I think, 1,200 miles for us, or 11. And we get down, and Chucky slept in the back of that cap and crawled in a sleeping bag. He was refreshed and everything. We got down there at 10 o'clock at night. Everybody's going to go to bed. Not Chucky. He's going coon hunting. And anyhow, I said, you're nuts. We drove a road to see if we could find TC's truck. And Arthur told us where he thinks he might be. So we went down this road, and we did find his truck, but we couldn't hear the dogs or anything. I blew the horn a few times. Nothing happened. Two guns in the gun rack. Doors ain't locked. Nothing. Up home, and nothing be left but one wheel on that truck. But down there, they must trust the people pretty good. Well, anyhow, TC came in sometime 3 a.m. They didn't get a coon. But Chucky went out and got a big coon from Mississippi, probably around 18 pounds. That's big down there. And anyhow, Chucky crawls back in the sleeping bag. He's sleeping in front of the fireplace. And coals are coming out of the fire because it was cold in there. And coals are coming out of the fire, landing on his sleeping bag. And Arthur's just sitting in the rocking chair, rocking right beside him. And one of the guys got up. He sees him touching Chucky's sleeping bag with a fly swatter or something. He said, "What are you doing, Arthur?" He says, "I got to take care of Mr. Chuck because he's the only hunter we got." Oh, the guys who were awake just laughed at him. Jack, there was another guy with us named Jack Cottrell, or Chuck Bailey. Well, they were together. Chuck Bailey, we went squirrel hunting this one day. We didn't have the dog. TC took him. So we said, we'll get some squirrels on our own. Well, anyhow, we didn't get nothing. Chuck says, "Moran, throw your head up in the air. See if I can."
Yeah, you told me this story before, but it's a good one. Go ahead.
I throw my head up in the air. He shoots at it one time, and I don't even know if he hit it. If he did, it wouldn't have mattered. It was just a $2 hat. I should throw you. This guy always wore Bailey. That was his last name, too, but he didn't have nothing to do with the hat company. I should throw your hat up. And he had a Bailey hat. And back then, they cost at least $25. It's a cowboy hat. He threw it up, and I had an automatic rifle. I shot at least 5 shots before it hit the ground, ran up to it and shot it 5 more times. He's chasing me up the road. He said, "You son of a gun."
I got an idea. He didn't say "son of a gun," but we won't.
Yeah. Well, I gotta keep it cool.
Keep it cool.
He shows that hat to old Arthur when we came back to the house where we rent. He said, "Arthur, what do you think of this? I was walking up the road, going to go in the woods squirrel hunt, and someone starts shooting at me. Look at my hat." And Arthur is serious as a heartbeat, man. He said, "Mr. Chuck, I sure would get the law after that, man."
All right. Yeah. Well,
when we left there, all of us give old Arthur at least $10 a piece
to buy a new hat.
He was a good guy. He fed us, cleaned up after us.
Yeah.
He was all right. My uncle, he said, "Come on, let's go to town and get a motel." I said, "I ain't getting a motel." He went to town and got cardboard boxes, a hammer and nails, and he found that over the wood in the house we were in. Because anywhere you turned your head and looked, you could see daylight. That place was well ventilated. Oh, that was something. My uncle couldn't wait to get out of there. He was no coon hunter.
Well, a lot of those old mountaineers in the southern Appalachians down south of where I lived and on down through Carolinas and all, they wouldn't put chinking in between the logs. They wanted that air to come through there. And well, sure there'd be snow on the covers in the morning when you woke up, you know, but they didn't believe in being shut in there with no fresh air, you know.
It's like that at this camp. Now, I went down there probably 4 to 5 years in a row. That was the only really, some of them weren't too bad, but that in there was bad. TC must have got it for $3 a month rent, and he pocketed some. But that was a heck of a place. But I like that. Holly Bluff, Mississippi. All flat. good timber, a lot of coon.
Yeah. Well, we've often thought about hunting the Mississippi Delta instead of the Arkansas Delta when we go out there. And I'd like to do that. But, you know, a friend, I have let old age creep up on me. And I'm not nearly as old as you are. Well, I say not nearly. I'll be 80 next fall. So well, I'm right behind you, you know. But it's, you know, a lot of these things that I just really love to do, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do them or not, you know. But I sure am going to try. This year I let a lot of things bunch up on me as far as my trip. Randy Smith that we mentioned, his mother passed away this fall. And so that pushed our trip back about 2 weeks. And then we had planned, the other boys that I go to Arkansas with had planned to go out there a week early this year, actually about 2 weeks early. So the combination of those two things happening, by the time I got back from Pennsylvania, I was tired. We'd hunted 7 nights. And then to just turn right around, I have to drive 2 days. One day to Alabama, overnight at Nubbins, and then the other day, you know, on over. Yeah. So anyway, I just made the decision this year I'd set it out, but I was antsy. I was getting a report every day from Nubbin about how the hunting was being. But, you know, it was when I was in Pennsylvania, it was bright moonlight every night. I mean, mm-hmm. bright as day.
I'm going to tell you an old Moran secret. And a lot of coon hunters know this, but a lot of them don't believe in it, but I do. The moon does make a difference in the wintertime, definitely when the leaves are off. Mm-hmm. In the summertime, not as much, not near as much. They still got cover in that, and they travel a lot better.
I think you're right. And it was unusual, kind of. The first couple of nights, we would hunt up till 9 or 10 o'clock, and just it would be dead. I mean, we'd tree a coon here, maybe one there. You know, it was just slow. And then it seemed like about 10 o'clock, somebody just threw the switch, and those things, you know, we were striking them right and left.
So, business believes in that. She goes late, and she said no traffic on the road to hit a good dog, and she goes late hunt when she hunts by herself. I go early. Yeah. I like to go soon. I got a woman that she's coon hunting with me a couple times. Well, I got two of them. One got cancer now, and she's taking treatment, and she's still hunting with me. I says, don't that bother you? She says, no. She says, I feel fine, Fred. I feel better than ever. I hope she continues like that. She gets the chemo every 21 days. Mm. But she keeps up to me and so forth, and she gets around pretty good. The other one is a real animal lover. She lives right above the river on the main drag in town where she lives. And she's Perky's aunt. And she feed 19 coon. Three possums and three cats on her porch every day. That was the highest number so far.
My goodness.
But usually it's about 6 coon, possum or two. I was there one night. I stopped, dropped something off for her, and I'd already been treeing. I treed 2 coon. I was going to go one more woods, which wasn't far from her. She said, come in. I want to show you something. She showed me on the back porch. She put the light on. A possum was there by itself. Well, you know what everybody thinks of her. This thing ate 2 bowls of macaroni while I was there. She cooks for these animals.
Cooks macaroni for the possum.
I said, you'll never get rid of them. I said, other people might throw them a piece of bread or something, but you're cooking for them. I said, you're crazy. So she's a character. She works at a food bank and she feeds the deer. She's a real animal lover. Well, Blondie was like that when I first met her, the one that's got cancer. First coon I shot, she cried. I said, get over it, kid. You know what was coming. So she's changed. But
well, sometimes you have to ease the women folk into the sport. Like I had that experience, trying my first wife. She liked to go to the trees and she liked to find the coon, and she got pretty good at it. So I'd let her shine and find the coon, you know. But then when the gun came out in October there in Michigan, she went, but she'd stand on the other side of the fence row or the other side of the tree and look the other way. Yeah. While we harvested the coon.
Like that.
Yeah.
I took my wife. She didn't care how much I hunted, but she'd go, but she didn't really like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when I got shot, in 76, I wanted to go so bad. I was in a bed for 10 months. And when I got, my doctor used to say, what are you doing? They had a cast on my leg up to the knee. And where I got shot in the foot,
we talked about that in our
hole, and they pull a plug out of there. Mm. And every day, as she was treating me at home, she'd pour betadine in there, which is like iodine, only it don't burn. And that's what made my foot go back together. It took 10 months. But I started hunting at about 9 months, and I'd wrap my foot in a garbage bag. And I had a cast for support, but it was sweat in there. And the cast would start falling apart. When I go to the doctor, he says, you're the only person I ever had that these casts fall apart. What are they falling apart from? What are you doing? I says, nothing, Doc. I didn't tell him I was coon hunting with a cast.
Right. Well, Fred, tell me about, have you gotten to hunt much this fall? Since your season,
I hunted less than I ever have, probably, but I'm still hunting. I went three nights last week. I could have went more. The weather's been fairly decent up until, say, this last week. And this is the first snowfall we've had. And it's been cold lately. And more than that, I don't know what's happening, where it's coming from, but we're getting a lot of wind every night, 30-40 mile an hour winds.
Now that's bad for hunting. I don't like to hunt in pouring rain, and I don't like to hunt in the wind. You have to take
it
as
the rain if it ain't real hard rain, but the wind I don't go for. I'll stay home.
Well, hunting in the rain, besides just it's uncomfortable, but they've got clothing out now enough, raincoats and things that make it tolerable. But I hate trying to shine a tree when it's raining. I mean, those raindrops falling straight down, those things hit you right in the eye. It feels like it's a marble or something. Do you have that experience?
No. Occasionally. I'm not bragging. I can find a coon. I'll find most of them if they're there. That's what I told Patty one night. She said, I couldn't find it. I said, you know why? She says, what? Because it ain't there. It's there. If your dog was treated there, it'd be there, wouldn't it? I get her. She bought one of them locators.
Yeah, the thermal
scope. Cost $1,800. I said, you got to be nuts. She says, well, I'm going to find them coon. I want to see if they're there.
So, yeah. Well, those things are very, very handy. And, you can get, like at this time of year when you're hunting a tree and den trees and stuff, you can see the heat around those den holes,
I know three guys who never had them before got them now.
Yeah.
They like yours. They're satisfied.
The first one I ever saw, I ever hunted with, I knew there were night vision goggles and scopes and stuff that the military had. But I'd never had any experience with them until I went up to Randy Smith's, and he had one there that night. And, man, you know, we'd see the coon. You could see either the body or the eyes. Uh-huh. But then I'd look at it through that scope, and it was amazing to see, you know, those things. You can set them to where it'll show red or black or white, you know, just depending on how you want it to look. But, yeah, they're pretty handy, pretty handy. But I'd say...
Yeah, they undoubtedly work because enough people are buying them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the only difference in men and boys is the price of their toys, they say.
Yep, yeah. That's about it.
Well, you got you still got that Redbone female that we talked about last time?
Yeah, that's the only dog I had a young female I picked up off a guy. And I sold it to a guy. He went hunting with my old dog. We treated three that night, and we saw them all. And he asked me, how much a dog like that costs? I says, well, I bought her when she was young. I says, it's a different price now if I go to sell it. I says, not because so much time I put in it. I just like the dog. Got her trained to come to a whistle when I blow it. I can get her out of the woods without her. Well, sometimes I leave the leash on, but if she just drags it, she knows to stay around. And she'll follow me out of the woods. I says, she's quiet in the kennel, and that's a big plus for me. I don't want no noise maker at the house, even though I'm out in the country. And I says, the price would be a lot different. And I says, you're talking about a star dog or a young dog that don't know nothing or a trained dog. I said, you being a beginner, he had Roger Hanning with us. And
I remember Roger. Yeah.
And Roger's got a walker dog now. And he likes red dogs. I sold him several. And I says, and he lives close to this guy. They're both farmers. Well, they work. He's a farmer. He raises cattle. That Roger, all he does is raise a little hick once in a while. But he's got the time to hunt, and he got a beautiful place. He sold his one farm for a real good price, and he bought another one, and it's nice. Nice old farmhouse in excellent shape, and a nice kennel and everything else. And he's got 200 acres with it. He can ride on the side by side anywhere on the property and treat coon or shoot a deer or whatever. So,
well, I tell you, that is such a rare thing anymore to be able to. I got a text yesterday. It was interesting. A guy from North Carolina, his name is David Brewer, and he says, are you the Steve Fielder that came down to North Carolina and we went hunting with you one night, me, and he named off the other two guys and yada, yada, and he named off his dog's names and all. And I didn't remember him, quite honestly. But as we started conversing back and forth, and we talked about the night that we went hunting, I remembered that night as the first night that I started getting symptoms that I might have a problem. The dogs treat around this reservoir, and they went a long ways, these walker dogs. And I had the AKC photographer with me, and we were going to take some pictures for the magazine, for the AKC Gazette. That's when we were first building that AKC Coonhound program. Anyway, those guys, you know, normally I don't have any trouble keeping up, or didn't at that time. You know, this is about 2005. So that's 20 years ago. But going around that lake, I ran out of air. I just got to the point where I couldn't get any air. I bent over, you know, and just sucking air And I said, man, this
shine old age.
This humidity.
I do that once in a while, but I have to put my asthma spray out and take a squirt. I take a squirt, I can keep going.
Well, that was really a telltale sign that I didn't observe. And it was the following spring then that I had the issue while out on night hunting, ended up having to have surgery. But anyway, the more we talked, and he talked about this guy named T-Bone was with us, and I said, now that name strikes a note with me because I remember a guy named T-Bone that got hurt in a truck wreck coming home from coon hunting. Mm-hmm. And what happened was the fellow went to sleep at the wheel. The truck went off the road and ran into a parked vehicle along the road.
Wow.
Man, if that doesn't wake you up out there, guys, if you're hunting sleepy, coming in from a coon hunt, and we've all done it, haven't we, Fred?
Pull over.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear the story about Larry Packy wrecking a Ford truck?
Yeah. You've told that on this podcast.
Which, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I imagine anything that hit Larry was pretty well wrecked.
I tell you what, when he took his shirt off 3 days later or so, showed me his flesh on his back, you couldn't see a white spot. It was all blue, everything. I don't know how he could even walk with that.
Well, I invite our listeners to go back and listen to the Fred Moran episodes. They're all right there on the DU Supply Network. Gone to the Dogs podcast. You can go back. And I was looking today, Fred, and it's hard for me to believe, but I have personally done something like 335 of these podcasts.
Wow.
And with this one today, this is the 214th one I've done for W Supply. So there's a lot of them, but you can go back and you get these stories. And I would urge all of you that are listening today, and I know you've been enjoying Fred. And by the way, I don't want to blow your head up too big, Fred, but you have quite a following on this podcast. People really enjoy it when you're on. But anyway, a lot of these stories.
Maybe they just enjoy turning me off.
No.
Hey, tell me something.
Yes.
Are they going to do anything on Full Cry?
Oh, that's a question. I'm going to give my opinion, and I will preface that by saying this is not official. I don't know for sure, but it looks like Full Cry's done.
Okay.
Great people that bought Full Cry from Terry Walker and were determined to make it work and to continue the tradition. I talked with them several times, and all they would talk about was, this magazine has been around so long, it's a crime to let this thing go away. And that was their motivation. But print media now...
If they cranked it up right now, that they'd come back and be glad they did. I really believe it, because you go to a coon hunters meeting at any club, that's all they talk. There's no magazine to find the dates and times. And I says, well, nobody's advertising for one thing.
Well,
Full Cry one time probably had 100 ads on dogs for sale. But it ain't going to be quite like that anymore. But I says, I feel there'll be a lot of guys come back to it that never thought of coming back to it before.
Well, what they say is that this summer was a difficult summer. Full Cry is a second enterprise for them besides their day job, so to speak.
Right, right.
And they guide these rafters and all on this river over in Oregon, and it's in the wilderness and all, and it required them to stay there. These rafters come down the river and they stay a night or two or three, I don't know how many, and then they go on, and then there's another camp on down the river type thing. Well, they had difficulty with internet service. They thought it was going to be okay, but then it wasn't. Then they were having to go back into town, which was some effort and all. So it was very difficult to conduct business that way. Also, I believe, and they didn't tell me this, this is all guesswork, that the subscriptions the first year were very good. And then, but then the renewals slowed down considerably. And that, it boils down to this, Fred. If people want this kind of thing, they've got to get off their pocketbook and spend a little money and buy a subscription or take out an ad every once in a while. You got an old dog out there you want to sell.
Definitely.
Send in a classified ad on him or whatever. You got a stud dog you want to blow and go with. Well, now everybody, and I've been guilty, blows and goes on the internet for free. And they don't, you know, but if you want the print media and you want something to hold in your hand and read like we're used to doing, you just got to pay for it. You've got to.
Really feel that they came back, though, that they'd make a real killing right now.
Well, they haven't said that they've stopped it. They've just said they've paused it for a while until they can get things back together. So I'm hoping that they do. No finer people in the world than Jason and Danny Duby. They are just outstanding folks. And Jason worked for W Hunting Supply out in, well, they were in Oregon, but the business is in Washington State. And that's W is the sponsor for this podcast. But they're just great folks, and I know that where their heart is. But it's just, it's a tough, tough thing to make a living in print media nowadays. The costs are so high.
Uh-huh.
You know, I notice, you know, I have a book I published, and I mail copies of those, and they go what's called media mail. I get a special rate because there's no ads in it.
Right.
It's, you know, it's gone, the postage of that in the last year has gone up over a dollar per book. So, you know, it's just a tough time for that sort of thing.
I, a farmer just drove by here where I'm parked at on the road to his house, but he ain't going to do nothing. He can give me permission. When I first moved up by my kid, I came out here and asked him. I made about 5 trips. He was never home. I finally caught him. I left a card on his door, and he called me. I said, I want to know what's the chance of coon hunting on your property. He says, help yourself. He says, they get in everything, he says.
So, well, yeah, well, we should tell our listeners that I kind of captured you as you were on the way deer hunting today.
I'm at a field right now, and they're – If it was dark, I'd have seen 30 deer right now. But it's just broad daylight, 11 o'clock in the morning or so. And deer. I've seen enough since season. I've seen 6 bucks the first day of deer season. That's pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't fire none of them. I could have killed all, there were 3 together. I could have killed any one of them. And it was on legal property where the deer was, but where I was parked at wasn't legal property. And I figured, as an old woman lives here, I thought maybe she'd come out and get my license plate number. I talked to her neighbor a couple of days ago because he used to fish and hunt with my kid. And I told him about it. I said, how come you ain't got that big one that's I seen on the power line? He says, I'll get it sooner or later. And he says, I told him about that woman. He says, she'd have never even come by the house. He says, you see how old she is? I said, I know her. I said, from back in the dog catching days. And then he says, she won't bother you. So,
well,
later.
That's what is really the biggest challenge that hunters have nowadays is being able to have a place to hunt.
You ain't a kidding. And there's less and less all the time.
Well, for sure. And down here, it's like that. Everything's tied up in leases.
Hey, how far are you from, not to change the subject at all, yeah. How far are you from Key West, Florida?
I don't know. It'd probably take me 5 hours to drive it.
Well,
I don't
you're
know.
You're that far.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm about
That's
halfway
where my
down.
Kid goes fishing.
Yeah.
He goes down there 2 days after Christmas. His wife and kids will go down there for 2 weeks. They'll fly home because you can fly from Florida to Pittsburgh for $59.
Oh, yeah. Allegiant and, Airlines. I flew up to Randy's and back, you know, round trip for less than $200.
I know.
You know, it's crazy.
I know. Yeah. Now he'll stay down there with him. He built a boat for the ocean. He's the only dummy I know that got 5 boats. And
he likes boats.
I guess so. And he bought one for the ocean fishing. Now, he told me I don't go in. I fish a little bit, but not much. His kid beat me, and that teed me off. His kid's 12 years old now. He caught more than me, but I caught the biggest one. But anyhow, Mike, he caught a 400-pound flounder, and he told me 2 sharks that were 8 foot long.
Man, well, right here.
Oh, he told me there's a million coon down there. They're in them mangrove trees.
Yeah, I see them in the daytime when I'm out on my kayak. See, I take the kayak out on high tide, and I fish around those mangroves for redfish. You know, red drum, and I just free line a live shrimp, or you can cut bait, take like a pinfish and cut it up, and but yeah, you see coons all the time. They're mostly after those little crabs, you know, those little hermit crabs or whatever.
He told me the coons eat them lizards down there. He said there's a million lizards.
Oh, there's lizards for days. We have they're actually a little chameleon. They're kind of like that Geico lizard you see on TV on the ads. They change colors, you know. If they get on the cover to my grill, they'll turn black. If they, you know, are up against the house, they'll be gray. Yeah. they're everywhere. And another thing that eats those things are these great herons, these big white birds. They'll come and you'll see one that will be sneaking around the house real quiet, and they're looking and in the shrubbery and just like a, you know, spearing an olive with a toothpick, they'll get one, you know, and you'll see them choking it down, you know.
He keeps wanting me to go down there. I said,
you need to come down.
I said, I didn't lose nothing in Florida.
Yeah. Well, we've got our share of Yankees, but you're not the average Yankee, Fred.
No, I'm not the average of anything.
They say down here there's two kinds: there's Yankees and damn Yankees. Mm. And the Yankees are the ones that come down in the winter and then they go back home.
But I got a cousin lives. She's lived there for 30 years, and she was only 16 when she was down there.
Where does she live?
I'd have to look at some of her mail and just remember.
Sure.
It ain't way down where Mike goes. I know that.
Well, you know, we've got plenty of people in Florida. We don't need any more. We don't mean to be rude, but
all them pensioners are down there.
All the what?
Pensioners are down there.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happens, you know, the people up in the Northeast and all that, they had good jobs and all, and they sold their house for a tremendous amount of money, you know, up there, and they can buy you know, more house for less money down here. But we're getting too crowded. They're building too much. They're cutting out all the timber and building subdivisions. And it's just crazy, you know, progress they call it, but they're ruining Florida. When I first came here in the 60s, it was mostly orange groves, lakes, and cattle ranches. It was beautiful, beautiful.
I couldn't in Ocala, Florida.
That's an hour and a half from me.
I probably told you. And mm-hmm. I went on my own. I stayed at that veterinarian. You said you knew him.
Heminger.
He's dead now. He had blue ticks.
Heminger.
Would you say?
Doc Heminger.
That sounds like it. And mm-hmm. I met him at Grand American. He mm-hmm. gave me the keys to his house. He says, yeah. I said, me and my wife taking two of the kids down to Disneyland, but I got the dogs with me because I run in Grand American yeah. that year. He said, well, stop at my place. You better yet stay at my place. I ain't going to be there for 4 days or three, one of the two. And he said, my wife's away. I said, no, I don't like to do something. He said, I insist. So I wanted to go hunting. I ain't going to sit home and watch television. I can do that in Pittsburgh. And so I went out looking for orange grove and some woods, and I found one. And I didn't get nothing. A dog never struck nothing. But I came back to the truck and put my dog in, just in a old beat-up car coming in, a Packy-mobile. And I jumped a 70-year-old guy and a girl about 16 or 18. I assume it was his daughter. And they opened the trunk of the car, and I'll bet you eight dogs run out of there. You name it, it was every kind you could think of.
Yeah, and one of them was a tree dog.
Probably. I stayed there for 10 minutes to see if it had a coon or even a possum, but they didn't do nothing any more than what I did.
Yeah. So I
left.
You know, nothing would please me more, Fred, then people from up north this time of year say, hey, Steve, we're going to be in Florida. I'd like to come by. I'd like to go hunting with you. I would absolutely love that. I don't have any places to take them. You know, I've got a private ranch. Well, actually, there's a farm and a ranch. There's guys that have the hunting rights to those places, to coon hunt. And I have to go with them. So I'm not going to invite,
somebody else
when I'm a guest myself, you know. I thought when I moved down here, and I mean no ill will or malice toward this fella, he's a longtime friend of mine and he's done a lot of things to help me. He can do anything that needs to be done. And he's fixed things for me on my trailers and my four-wheeler and my kayak, built a trailer for it, all kinds of things. He has some of the best coon hunting in the world when I first came down here because he's a farrier and he has access to all these ranches. And there's a lot of cattle ranches in Florida.
G.G. Harris told me that's how he hunted with ranches.
Right.
He said he had permission from all of them.
Sure. And they don't mind you coon hunting, you know. But somebody's trying to call me here. Let me get rid of that. But anyway, he is not hunting anymore. His health doesn't permit him to. And so, you know, he had exclusive permission on all these properties because he shooed the horses for those ranches, you know. So they don't know me from Adam's house cat, you know. So anyway, that's just the way it is. It's a fact of life, you know, and I hate it because I'd really, at this stage in my life, it'd be fun for me to hunt with some new guys and show them what hunting in Florida's like.
Well, maybe someday I might go with my kid.
Come with your son and we'll
figure. If he promises to pick me up in 3 or 4 days.
we'll find a spot, Fred. We'll find a spot.
We'll ride the road till we hit one with a truck.
That's right. Roadkill. It's Himalayan coons, they say. You found Himalayan in the highway. Okay. Well, Fred, it's great to talk to you, buddy. I'm glad I caught up with you.
Call.
Did you see that old mossy horn buck out there anywhere that you made?
I got a 4-point coming in my yard every day. Usually, he ain't been there lately.
Yeah,
last 4 or 5 days, and I don't think anybody. I saw tracks this morning in the snow. I assume it was him. And anyhow, he's He only has 4 points. In our state, it has to have at least 3 on one side.
Oh,
and the other side could be a spike, but it got to have three on one side.
I see. Well, we're starting to get some interference. The phone's making a little noise.
All right. Well, but, you take care. Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you for spending time with me, Fred. I really appreciate you. Take care of yourself.
All right. Good night, JJ.
There we go. Folks, that's Fred Moran, the Redbone Man from the great state of Pennsylvania, out on a deer hunt today, taking some time to spend with us, and we appreciate Fred so much for doing so. Folks, if you need anything for your dogs, your hunting apparel, electronics, service on those electronic products, WU Hunting Supply. They're the best in the business. We so appreciate them sponsoring this podcast. Also want to thank my good friend Mark Zepp with Zepp Predator Calls. You find Mark at markzepp.com. Folks, I'll be at the Grand American this year. That's coming up on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of January. I will not be in the typical place where I've been for several years there in the vendor barn because we talked about fact that Full Crime Magazine will not be there this year. So I'll be just hanging out. We will have a booth or a display area for our plot dogs. My partners Mark Miller and Cody Fox will be there. We'll have our dogs Fever and Ghost with us. They'll both be hunting both nights at the Grand American. So at any rate, I'll be around. I'll try to sneak over in the show barn and see as many of my friends over there as I can. I'll be there all 3 days. Look forward to seeing you. If someone asks you where Steve Fielder these days, well, now you can tell them he's gone to the dogs. He's at the Grand American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.